Welcome to the Free Cities Podcast. My name is Timothy Allen, and this is the official podcast of the Free Cities Foundation. Hello, and welcome to this episode number 125 of the Free Cities Podcast. And welcome indeed. It's a beautiful, beautiful spring day here in the English countryside, bringing you today's episode. Also brought to you by our fabulous sponsors, Veritas Village, the first one, a phenomenal project in Panama, building off-grid, energy self-sufficient luxury homes for freedom lovers. In my personal opinion, these kinds of places are certainly going to play a large part in the future for many libertarians and general lovers of liberty. Last week's show with Jeremy Kaufman is a must listen if you want to understand how, for example, the Free State Project way of creating new societies works and why it's so important. The theory is, of course, if you attract people to a physical location, you then just start living freely together and things take care of themselves. Veritas Village is another version of this. They're creating places where freedom lovers can amass together and build beautiful futures with very long-term ideas. You know where to go, www.ecovillages.life/podcast, or jump in the show notes for everything you need to know. Please mention us in your dealings with Eco Villages. Second sponsor for today's show is the wonderful Trey Franzoy, who brought us out to the USA to meet so many interesting people at the leadership program of the Rockies. Many thanks for your generosity, Trey, and especially to Maylin, who was working with him and who was introducing me to so many of the guests who are appearing on the show. And today's guest is one such person. And this conversation is certainly one for the Americans amongst you, because it's about the healthcare system in America. But it's also for those of you who, like me, may have never even considered the idea of free market healthcare before. Many of us are born into systems that, well, kind of trick us into thinking that that's just the way things are. Travis Bockenstedt is an American who saw the absurdity and corruption of the US healthcare system and decided to do something about it. Anyway, time to see what my trusty AI assistant thought of the chat. And after last week's little personality change, it gave me an idea, and I wished I'd done it on last week's show, but it came to me later. I asked my AI to take on the persona of a Marxist to review my conversation with Jeremy Kaufman, and it gave a very interesting response. So this week, I've decided to ask my AI to become the CEO of a pharmaceutical company to review the show. So many thanks for this kind review, and let's hear what he/she has got to say. By the way, I said it could be a sarcastic CEO. It definitely went hard on the sarcasm. Right. Oh, wow. Travis, the inverted commas healthcare disruptor, very edgy, very heroic, president and CXO of some primary care company, which I'm sure is just revolutionizing medicine one budget appointment at a time. In this episode, he shares his inspiring journey. You know, it's the classic, I got a $26,000 bill for an anxiety attack, and now I'm taking down the entire US healthcare system story. Touching, really. He talks about the, inverted commas, complexities of medical billing. Like we didn't spend decades perfecting them. Insurance loopholes, lack of transparency. Oh no, how terrible. It's almost like the system was built to be confusing, predatory, and profitable. Oh wait, it was. Then comes the big pitch. Direct primary care. Transparent pricing, no insurance interference, just doctors and patients talking like it's, well, 1952. How quaint. I mean, what's next? House calls and bartering with chickens? And of course, Travis gets on his soapbox about preventative care and how we should shift consumer behaviour. Yes, let's definitely get people healthy before they need drugs. Brilliant plan. I'm sure our shareholders would love that. Anyway, he wraps up with a sweet little free market fantasy. Better outcomes, lower costs, educated consumers. Because nothing says sustainable healthcare like asking patients to become actuaries, economists, and medical experts all at once. Anyway, it's adorable, really. He's trying so hard to fix a system that's working exactly as intended. For us. Great. A very fine and upstanding review. Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. Anyway, before you get the real show, Nosta comments and strategic Bitcoin reserve contributions this week from user 842, Anon, Justin, many thanks. Comments, now someone called 757-3626. That's an interesting name. I wonder if there's any significance to that. The comment is, your pod has become one of my favorites, Tim. Thanks. Promoting liberty and its ideas is admirable work. Keep up the good work. Many thanks, 757-3626. It's not hard at all. I thoroughly enjoy it, and I'm grateful that you appreciate it. Justin says, I'm just here to ensure your episodes don't go boostless. Thank you. That's a reference to the fact that last week's show didn't have any comments for some reason. First one time ever. So Justin's got in there just to ensure, and added to the Bitcoin reserve as well. Many thanks, Justin. Right. Time to make America healthy again. And you can start in quite a simple fashion yourself. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Travis Borkenstedt. I asked Malin, you know, okay, tell me about Travis. And she said, it might be easier if I just show you this. And she sent it through to me, and it is your LinkedIn bio. And it says what you do. I'm going to read it out for you. You can comment if you like. Yeah,
perfect.
Healthcare disruptor, direct primary care evangelist, non-profit board chair, president and CXO at Pinnacle Advanced Primary Care. Healthcare disruptor sounds like a good in to me. What's the life of a healthcare disruptor like?
I think the life of a healthcare disruptor is someone who's been jaded by the U.S. healthcare system. And my story begins with a $26,000 surprise medical bill. And we all have a why in our life, right? That motivates us to do something. And when you get socked with a bill like that, you question the system. And the worst part of this was, I was the one paying for this healthcare for myself and my employees. So this happened 7 years ago. I spent 9 hours in the ER from an anxiety attack. If any of the listeners or viewers have had one before, it feels like a heart attack, right? And the insurance company 7 years ago found a loophole not to cover any of my stay.
Well, I'd love to go into that if you don't mind.
Of course.
I mean, even the ins and outs of an anxiety attack. But let me guess that an anxiety attack wasn't necessarily classed as a real medical condition. It wasn't anything like that, was it?
Well, it was because I wasn't admitted to the hospital. They found a loophole. And
what do they do? Leave you outside?
Oh my God. But we've had some reform in the U.S. healthcare system since then, like the No Surprises Act and bills like that. But this was prior to that. So, you know, U.S. insurance companies do not want to pay, just like many insurance companies, right? The idea you pay into this, but when you need it, you don't get what you want, even in a car crash in the United States. So that was really my tipping point to say something is wrong here, and no one could provide me with an itemized bill. It was 6 line items that cost that much money. In no other economy could you do that.
Wait a minute. So, and you're insured as well. This is the point. You're insured.
Insured.
You go to the hospital with an anxiety attack.
Nothing much happens. Did they treat you?
They did some blood work. They put me on a heart monitor and sat me in a bed.
But what I don't understand is how is that even worth $26,000 anyway?
Yeah, that's the deal. There is no true free market value to anything in the U.S. healthcare system. Insurance plays a... they upscale, upprice things and do a fake discount on stuff, right? So, and the other thing is... let me compare it to going to McDonald's, okay? And let's say we have two different insurance plans. Well, first of all, in the U.S. healthcare system, you're going to walk out of that McDonald's with no bill, and they're going to say, well, we'll bill you later, right? You may pay $5,000 for your cheeseburger, and I may pay a dollar on the dollar menu. But it depends on what insurance plan you have, what network. So my case is, if we want to blow up the U.S. healthcare system and doge it, that would be detrimental to the U.S. consumer right now because they have no concept of what the care really costs.
Did you ever get to the bottom of what that $26,000 was for?
Yeah.
Did you get it itemized?
Absolutely.
Oh, come on then. What was it?
So $2,500 of that was for lab work.
Really?
Yeah.
Like a test?
A test, which I later found out I could have got that lab work for about $50.
Now, before we go on, how do they get away with that? Like, how does a company get away with charging $2,500 for something that's worth $50?
Because it's the Wild West of U.S. healthcare. You can get away with whatever you want,
basically. I don't
know
much about the U.S. healthcare, though. I mean, I assumed it was a market of buyers and sellers, and if the drug costs... like, presumably you don't choose who you go with. That's the thing. You choose your insurance provider, but you don't choose your healthcare provider. Is that it?
Right, right. So... the U.S. consumer experiences healthcare through the insurance company. An insurance company is not a healthcare provider. It's just a very warped payment system that we have for things. So what they do is they do a huge markup discount game. And what happens in our healthcare system is that people have relatively high deductibles. So you may be paying into the system, but then you have a $5,000 deductible you must meet before the insurance starts kicking in. But then on top of that, you could have co-insurance and an out-of-pocket max. It is a never-ending cycle of consumer confusion, and that is the game that they want to play.
So what happened to... I've insured myself for everything up to $20 million. You pay it. Where did that go? Or why did that go away? I mean, that's... what you, when you insure most other things, that's what you do. If you're insuring your phone, you pay a premium, you know how much the phone costs, and they might say, do you want to, say, pay the first 100 of it, pay the first 200 of it,
sure.
And that's up to you.
Right. The difference when your phone premium or insurance that you pay is it's not going to reset every year. So imagine the U.S. healthcare system, you have a high deductible, $5,500, $10,000, and you have a chronic illness. Every year, that clock will reset. So
why is that? Is that just a quirk of the system? Or, I suppose it must do because it's ongoing care.
It's ongoing.
You don't get ongoing care with an item, do you?
Right. But pretty insane knowing that every year that's going to reset and you will face that healthcare expense every single year with the
plan.
But
your case, it was a one-off anxiety attack.
Exactly.
I'm not surprised. Did the joke not become obvious to them that probably gave you an anxiity attack when you got it? Or was it they were going for repeat business, weren't they? They were like, here, if we give this guy a 26K bill, he's going to have another one and come in, so we'll get another one.
But here's the best part of it. That bill didn't all come at once.
Oh.
So a month later, you get one surprise bill. And then a few weeks later, you get another surprise bill. Because every department may bill a little differently. And you may have had experienced a physician that was out of network, that saw you in the ER. Well, when you're in a crisis, you don't have the time to say, oh, doc, are you in my network or not? Now, there are protections now 7 years later for that, but there are still major loopholes in our healthcare system that make people financially vulnerable.
Just for the giggles then, what was the rest of the 26? So we've got 2,500 for a blood test, which sounds like a great blood test. Mm-hmm. I hope they told you a lot. Did they give you a complete DNA run over for that?
I mean, I don't even remember, but I hope it was comprehensive. The other 6,000, about 6,000 of that was a heart monitor that I had to wear. They told me it was going to be $500 for a week, but they upcoded it and it ended up costing $1,000 a day, roughly. And then the rest of that was codings for the ER visit and every single person who touched my care. Because keep in mind, in the United States, we have fee for service. We have 69,000 codes that are used to bill healthcare encounters.
Then again, people say that you get the best healthcare in the world. Is that right?
You know, I tell people, if you have the rarest disease in the world or cancer or things like that, we have an amazing healthcare system. But if you're just the average Joe that ends up in the ER or needs a specialist visit or a surgery, you do become very financially vulnerable.
All right, then. So presumably you then, by the way, can I dig a little bit deeper into the anxiety attack? Is it anything in particular, or was it just a general life is unbelievable?
No, so I was a young entrepreneur running my own production company. Actually, at the time, I started in the media industry before becoming a direct primary care evangelist. And for those of us, and you've been in the media, it's a high you ride constantly. And then eventually your body is just like, screw you, dude. And you just crash. And for me, I was just young entrepreneur running, but not taking care of my health and wellness. And that's where I ended up.
You still look young to me. How old are you, by the way?
37 and a half.
Oh, really? You look incredibly young. I would have put you in your 20s, honestly. 37.
37.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. So you realize the system's broken, mm-hmm. obviously. Did you pay the bill, by the way, or what happened to the bill in the end?
Most people in the U.S. healthcare system allow it to go to collections. And there's actually a
what
book.
What does that mean?
So you don't pay the bill and let it go to a collections company.
And they still come to you, presumably?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they'll negotiate with you where the hospital may not. So it sounds crazy to let your bill go to collections. There's a great book you should read called Never Pay the First Bill. And you never pay the first bill because more than likely they've screwed it up.
But presumably, like in the UK at least, if you've got an unpaid bill, the next knock on the door might be what we call a bailiff who comes to reclaim items from you to pay that bill. Is that not something, is that a long way down the line?
So there are some new consumer protections now that prevent surprise medical billing and that have taken medical debt off your financial record, off your credit. And a reason for that is because there is no true market to healthcare, that the consumer ends up by accident in a situation where they're owing 26 grand. And when the average US consumer only has $1,000 in a savings account, you can imagine the financial situation they're in.
So you were, what did you do? Just default and then settle for like $100 or something.
So then once it goes to healthcare collections agency, you spend weeks screaming at each other over the phone, demanding itemized bills. And usually you're able to talk that down. So I was able to talk it down quite a bit. But then imagine this. I'm making payment plans to the healthcare collections company and the hospital buys my debt back.
I don't even understand that. What does that even mean?
So that means that at any time, the hospital system can take that debt and pull it back into their system.
For what reason? I don't understand.
Maybe they want to buy the debt back from the collections agency because they think they can recover more money from it.
But hold a minute. If you've made an agreement with the debt collector.
Correct.
For X amount.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now, instead of the debt collector collecting it over a period of time, the hospital's collecting it again.
Just bought your debt back.
But why? What's the point? Presumably you've signed a contract with the debt collector or something along those lines.
The best answer I can give you, and it's really not the best answer, but it's true, because they can.
Yeah, but what does it get them? Are they imagining they're going to renegotiate it up again?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. That's such a waste of money. Go on then. Did they? And they did, right?
And
did they try and push the price back up again?
Mm-hmm. More screaming matches on the phone. And yeah, I mean, geez, I thought the anxiety attack was bad, let alone haggling with these people. And it's just very frustrating because you can never get a straight answer. There's always this, there's always that, or this person coded this, and I just called BS on it. So my tipping point, I Googled doctors who don't accept insurance. I wanted a physician not attached to the U.S. health insurance system.
Right. So you literally have to go to the doctor, and before they see you, they say, it's going to cost you this, and you write them a check, or you just put your card in the thing at the end of your... Is that how it works?
For an insurance-based practice.
No, but for the non-insurance?
Oh, for us. So...
No, but you said you went to look for doctors that didn't accept insurance, right?
Right, because I wanted a cash relationship where they could tell me the exact price. I could write them a check or use my debit card and pay and not worry about a surprise medical bill. You know, because every other service you buy, there's a menu, there's a price list, but not in the U.S. healthcare system.
Well, that's interesting. So why is that first? Why is it that the medical system... medical healthcare system in its current form is so scammy and so bullshitty is the best way to describe it. Yeah. No, but like not itemized bills, like you say, in what right. other aspect of society do you get a non-itemized bill? And if you did, you would instantly request it. It's like, right. what am I paying for here? You know,
because they're figuring the vast majority of US citizens are going to have an insurance plan of some kind. And the hospital systems are in cahoots with the insurance systems and the pharmaceutical industry. And it's just really a gross, corrupt industry. And you're around LPR right now, right? Where we're free market capitalism individuals. The U.S. healthcare system does not apply to any of this.
But you can do a free market version.
But you can't.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
I forgot to ask. Why didn't your insurance company pay the bill originally? What was the loophole?
The loophole was because I wasn't admitted to the hospital.
Right.
I just sat in the ER for 9 hours.
Really?
Which is a waste of
inside,
ER space.
That's inside the hospital. Come on, you could have called them out on that. So it would have been in the hospital. I walked through the front door. Come on.
Right. But then you call back your clinic that billed you. And this is also what just make your brain explode. We don't do billing here. What do you mean you don't do billing here? You're the one that sent me the damn bill. You're going to have to call the billing department. No. I want to speak to the doctor who ordered this. And that's what I did with the heart monitor. And I said, I demand for the cardiologist to come out. I wouldn't leave. So he comes out and he goes, well, I don't know what things cost. I said, what do you mean you don't know what things cost? He goes, I just put in the code. I'm like, are you kidding me? So, you know, the Hippocratic Oath says do no harm to patients. We want to take it a step further and say do no financial harm to your patients.
Sounds good. Something else I just thought of. What was I going to say? I was thinking of something then about your bill. I can't remember. It'll come to me. Let's carry on then. So you went to the free market, which there is a free market for healthcare as well, obviously.
There is.
And these are doctors. We would call this the private healthcare system, I suppose. But for you, it's just, what's it called?
So what we call it is the direct primary care movement. And what we're talking about is a segment of the healthcare industry called primary care and family medicine. Your PCP, your GP. This is the physician, really, that focuses on preventive health. A good PCP will prevent you from using the most expensive part of our healthcare system, which is the ER and urgent care. But here's the trouble with preventive medicine in the United States. We're looking at 6 to 8 weeks out. You're going to spend about an hour in our waiting rooms. You're going to get 7 minutes on average, 7 to 15 minutes with your provider. You get to bring one ailment at a time. Because remember, we got to bill you for everything you talk about. Often your doctor will say, stop, I'm going to have to bill you more if we bring this up, right? So for primary care physicians in the United States, the average panel size is 3,000 patients they're responsible for. They will see 20 to 30 of those a day. And to get paid, they have to document everything they did.
Can I ask a question? I remembered what I was going to say. In your case, the 26,000, had the insurance company not scammed you, would they have paid the full amount? Would they just have written a check for the 26,000?
No, because I don't remember what my deductible was then, but let's the average kind of deductible is around $5,000. I would have had to pay that $5,000 before my insurance company would have covered the rest.
But they would have. They wouldn't have contested the bill themselves. The insurance companies just pay. Is that how? Is that why it happens? Like, because they're just they see a number on a page and they press pay.
No.
So they would have. So out of their 21.
They would have debated if they would have looked at every line item in there and found an excuse not to pay it.
So they did the job that you did. You did that job as well, right? But you right, you did it yourself.
And here's I asked someone in the insurance industry once. I said, "Tell me how claims are approved and denied." And he goes, "Travis, take 500 pages of paper and drop it down a balcony. And whoever's lands first gets paid. Everybody else gets screwed." I said, "Are you telling me the truth?" They're like, "Yeah, there's really no science to it." Now, I'm sure insurance people listening to this are going to be like, "Travis, come on. You're making it too complicated." No. You screwed me and you're continuing to screw people in the United States.
Right. So have you had an experience in the free market since then?
So yes. So I did that Google search of doctors who don't accept insurance about 7 years ago. And I discovered this model called direct primary care. Think of DPC or direct primary care like the Netflix of healthcare, like your YouTube TV subscription, the food box you get delivered. We are taking the subscription economy and applying it to primary care and family medicine. So we are essentially changing the payment model. Now, keep in mind, if our primary care practice accepted insurance, 40% of our revenue would go to billing you. We would have to hire entire staff to sift through codes, to apply it to an insurance company, and we're often waiting 90 days to even get that money back. So we do away with it, and our reoccurring revenue model, instead of 3,000 patients, our doctors have 700. They will see 6 to 10 patients a day for an average of 40 minutes apiece. We do not process insurance. We do no insurance claims, no medical billing or coding at all. All of our pricing is transparent, just like a food menu when you come into the practice. And it's a revolutionary model that keeps family physicians in the profession and is focusing on preventive health.
So you pay, when you say you pay a subscription, mm-hmm. it's still insurance, isn't it?
I mean, No.
So you take all your subscriptions, put them in a pot.
Boom.
But that's kind of what insurance is as well, isn't it?
Well, insurance would say, though, that you come into the office and I'm going to rob the money out of the pot to pay. I would think of it more as having a family physician on retainer is what it is. Kind of like a lawyer if you have on retainer, right? You're going to have that family physician on retainer and it's unlimited. You can see them as often as you need. Instead of waiting 6 to 8 weeks, we're talking same day, next day visits. And just like the old days, you get your doctor's contact information. So after hours and weekends, if something happens, you can contact them and get the care that you need.
All right, then let's use your prior production company anxiety attack as an example. Yeah. What would that look like now? So you wake up, you know, mm-hmm. you're on the set of Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah. which gives you anxiety anyway, and you realize, oh my God, I can feel the fear rising in me. I need to get out of it.
Sure.
What do you do now?
Well, let me first start and say that 90% of all healthcare concerns can be done by your family physician or your GP, right? So we're only talking about the 10% where I tell people you get hit by a bus here in Colorado, you shatter your leg skiing, those things you need to go to the ER and urgent care for. But in my case, I had no resiliency. I had no family physician, a good doctor in my back pocket that could say, "Travis, you are running yourself ragged. You're not taking care of yourself. Your physical and mental health is poor." And in that case, and I did have an anxiety attack a few years later, but it was completely different.
Under
this healthcare model.
Okay.
Right? So I was able to get a hold of my family physician within an hour. We talked about what was going on. Literally, well, I don't want to say talk me off the wall. That's not a good thing to say. Talk me down.
Off the ledge.
That I was not there. But that idea of they knew my health and wellness. Because they don't have 3,000 patients, they know that Travis has some of these things that are triggers. So we talked about it and came into the office the next day to chat about a little bit more, but I did not go to the ER. This did not last days because I had a whole new toolkit in a way to start to deal with these things. In traditional healthcare, would have been a visit to the ER again, which a lot of people in the United States end up in the ER in urgent care, and they should not be there. And they're there because if something's happening to you, maybe you have a ear infection, or maybe you're a woman and you have a UTI. If you don't have a family physician you can call on, your only place to go is the ER and urgent care.
And you were saying earlier, weren't you, that ERs where all the major horrendous costs happen.
Oh, yeah.
In general.
Right? Absolutely.
So how do you deal with that now under your new version of healthcare?
Yeah. So because our members have such high access to their primary care physicians, we tell them unless it is your life, your limb, or your eyesight, if it is one of those three things, you need to call 911 immediately. If it is not one of those things, you start with us because we're kind of like a gatekeeper. Not in a gatekeeper of a sense saying you don't get that care, a gatekeeper to say, hey, you need an MRI. Let's call our cash pay MRI providers in town and see what best rate we can get you. It's a freaking MRI machine.
Right.
Right?
But what if it is an emergency though? How are they covered another way?
Yes, good question. All of our members have something for what I call major medical. Our members do one of two things. One, they do get a high deductible health plan, like I've been talking about, with that higher, you know, $5,000 out of pocket. But keep in mind, using our clinic, they're not going to be paying huge bills like that. Another movement that we have in the United States is called the health share movement. Again, this is similar to insurance in a way, but it's a lot more affordable. Obamacare allowed, or the Affordable Care Act, allowed anyone with a pre-existing condition to get healthcare coverage, which is actually really important at the end of the day. If you have type 1 diabetes, you didn't ask for that, right? So there's certain chronic illnesses that you didn't ask for, but we still need to take care of you. So the cost of Obamacare is quite high. If you're a healthy individual and don't use the system a lot, a health share is probably half the cost of regular insurance and provides that sort of bridge for the stuff that your primary care physician can't do. So our members do have different options for their major medical.
But, and comparatively speaking, compared to an insurance policy, what's not, and I'm not talking about how much you have to pay when things happen, but is it more reasonable to do it under your system?
Oh, absolutely. So we work.
Give me an example. Like I'm I'm a single 54 year old. Mm-hmm. What do I pay for? I don't know. Primary care then, or
through our practice.
Yes.
So for our membership with us, 70% of our members come from employers, by the way, and the other 30 are just retail. So if you're a retail consumer and you come to me, it's $85 a month for unlimited access to our practice with no copays, deductibles, or office visit fees.
That doesn't seem to make sense. My sister-in-law lives in California, and I'm sure she's paying $2,000-something a month, and she still gets billed when she goes to see the doctor, I think $100.
Right.
But how can it be that much?
So keep in mind, we're separating two things. We've got the primary care membership, the direct primary care, that's at 85.
Which gives you access to a doctor when you want.
All you want.
And what about if you get some medicine off that doctor, for example, or, you know?
Oh, so let's distinguish that quickly. In the United States, we have our generic medications and we have our brand name. Oftentimes, U.S. pharmaceutical companies will develop drugs. The U.S. citizens will pay the high cost for it, but folks overseas get the generic rate. But if it's a generic medication, we can get most generics $10 for a 90-day supply, easily.
Compared to what?
Well, I would say, let me give you one more example. There are brand name medications and their generic equivalent. We will find that certain doctors and hospital systems will prescribe you the brand name, even though you could get the generic for like $10. I had a woman paying $500 a month for her medication that her doctor prescribed. She was distraught. And I said, give me the name of the medication. I looked it up and I go, we can get this for $50 a month. And she was completely silent.
I mean, is this because the doctors are getting a kickback or not, a legitimate one? I don't mean they're being malpractice.
I think sometimes it's ignorance. Quite often, like I said, with my heart monitor, he didn't know what he was. He didn't
you
know how much it cost.
You could probably buy a heart monitor for $1,000 a day for 5 days, 10 days. What was it? 5 days?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Heart monitors, unless it's one of those big ones that you cart around in a hospital. But if it's a wearable, it can't be.
It was just a Holter monitor.
It's probably $1,200 tops.
But let's talk stitches. for instance. If you go to the ER for stitches, that could be $500 to $1,500. If you go to us, it's $15. Because we're only charging you for the needle, the supplies to ship it to us, and we're essentially giving it to you for wholesale. I don't know if you're familiar with like Costco or Sam's Club in the United States, but they're just wholesalers you go to and get things for a discount. That's the same with us, right?
It seems, so look, $85 a month seems like that seems like too good a deal. What about the rest of the costs? There must be other things, like there must be, well, apart from the cost of the medicine, are there any medicines you can't get good prices on, or treatments? Like what happens if it's like an actual treatment you need, or surgery or something like that?
Yeah. So, well, one thing on the drug cost, if it is a brand name medication in the United States, the only way you can get an affordable price is to run it through insurance, or to have a certain income level, apply to the pharmaceutical company to give you a discount card. Now, keep in mind, you're going to have to requalify for that discount, your income, quite frequently.
Wait a minute, whose income? The person that's taking...
The person that's taking the medication.
You mean if they've got a low income, they get a discount?
They may, right, from the brand name pharmaceutical company. Right. So I'll give you one example, okay? Let's use the HIV and AIDS epidemic, right? There are very effective medications out there that are keeping people undetectable and healthy to old age. Things have changed a lot, right? Gilead is one of the biggest manufacturers of HIV medication. We in the United States pay roughly $4,500 a month for that medication. You can get it in Australia for $7.
Sounds like Ivan.
Right. Frustrating. So then you
But how? Like, what doesn't make sense?
So what they did then is they've had some effective drugs, right? But what these big companies kind of went out and did, and let's just hope Gilead isn't listening, but basically they fear-mongered these patients who have to take this medication for the rest of their life, and basically had doctors and facilities move them before the patent went out for the generic version. They worked with hospitals and HIV clinics to move the patients to the brand name medication. Because if you're, not just HIV, if you're on a cancer drug or a chronic illness, right? Are you going to go back to an older version?
I don't know.
No. Right? Is this inferior? So, I mean, I could give you case by case examples of that. But like I said, our goal really at the end of the day is to prevent you from having to use the most expensive part of the system. And a good family doctor can take care of most of those things. We could actually do a lot of procedures in office. There are some cool things happening. We have Surgery Center of Oklahoma and Smith Medical Center here in the South Denver area up north. They are completely cash pay surgical centers. So if you want the price of a knee replacement, you can go online.
Price of a what?
A knee replacement or a hip or whatever. You can go to their website and they have a menu for everything. Completely cash pay surgical facilities. So we are finding ways to take what used to be very high cost specialty surgeries, and now we have direct to consumer surgical centers that are completely bypassing insurance.
I must admit, I only started thinking about private. You know, do you know anything about the national healthcare system that we have in the UK?
So I studied in Australia in Melbourne, and what I've learned down there anyway is there's a, tell me if I'm wrong, semi kind of public kind of healthcare basic needs you can get met, but then most people are getting like private ambulance coverage or other private medical stuff to wrap around.
No, most people are just using the NHS as far as
really,
yeah, which is, you know, something we have to pay by law. We don't get the choice to not pay it.
Oh,
well, it's a tax.
Okay,
it's an income tax, mm-hmm, basically that you pay that pays for healthcare, and whatever happens to you, you just go and you get it free under the NHS. They exclude some things.
You like get it.
You can't free. Get a boob job. You can't get a nose job. You know, there's things
cosmetics,
that you can't.
Cosmetics, yeah.
Things like that. But on the whole, and people very much used to swear by it as a system. Used to love it. I think more recently, it's not something. Well, put it this way. More recently, I've realized that what I should be doing is paying absolutely nothing to anyone until I get sick and then paying for that. For example, I had my eyes fixed recently, and I went to Harley Street, which is, I don't know if you know Harley Street, it's the kind of poshest doctors in the country, okay, all in one street in London. It's okay, normally where the hoi polloi go to get their medical stuff done. And I found I just thought to myself, well, I'm going to get my eyes fixed. I found the guy that invented the procedure,
yeah,
and who does it out of his own office.
Yes.
And it costs, all right, it costs, you know, I think it was like £6,000. Mm-hmm. You could probably get it done somewhere else for £3,000 or £2,000. Sure. But the point was, it made me realize, well, hell, really, if you added up all the money I've paid over the years, and nothing, I've never had anything really much go wrong with me, I've been pretty healthy, it would be probably a better idea to have not paid any of that. But then when the time came to actually do something, then I should just pay privately out of my own pocket. Most people obviously do private insurance. That would be how you would do it.
And yeah,
I have no experience of that. But really, you know, the difference in the service for me, I mean, you know, I went to I wouldn't call it a hospital, but where they had, you know, it was like this. It was opulent. There was free
the Broadmoor
food
for healthcare.
There was free food everywhere, and teas and coffees, and lounge chairs, and everyone was polite and nice and welcome in, Mr. Allen, and all this kind of stuff. Whereas if you go to an NHS, it's a production line, and they're trying their hardest. There's a lot of lovely doctors and nurses that work in those places, but really, they look a little bit like scenes out of a horror movie, white walls, you know, like very, you know, like strip lights. It's really not.
I was in Germany once and had to go to a German hospital.
They're not too bad, actually.
But not too bad. I was actually bringing a student of mine, and we walk in, and she looks at me, and I said, it's okay. It's not the Taj Mahal of U.S. hospitals. And it was just white walls, very simple, you know, but wasn't used to that. Right. But still provide a good care.
Well, the interesting thing is, me and my wife, before we had kids, we lived in Germany.
Okay.
We lived in Berlin. And at the time we were in the EU. So actually we got free healthcare in Germany. And
really?
My wife actually got pregnant while we were there. And she did the first sort of 2 or 3 months worth of you know, natal healthcare in Germany. And she said it was wonderful compared to the UK. I mean, we came home halfway through her pregnancy, so to move back home.
Yeah.
But so Germany is actually probably better than the UK. Anyway, point I'm saying is, we are not, well, number one, in the UK, we are forced by law to pay for our healthcare. There's nothing, if you want private healthcare, you pay that as well. So I pay that on my tax bill, and the more I earn, the more of it I pay, regardless of whether I have private healthcare or not. So
we did it in a backwards way. So during the Obama years, if you did not choose a commercial health plan in the United States, you were fined $600 to $800 a year on your tax bill. So the government forced
you. They were taxed.
Right. And I, keep in mind, I have not played the traditional insurance game for 7 years. I electively paid the $600 and some.
Oh, you had to pay it then.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, but it was a tax. I hate it when the governments do this.
Yes.
It's all tax. Like if it's going from me to the state, it's a tax. I don't care whether it's a fine or inflation they cause or whatever. It's all a tax to me and it all adds up. And I think, you know, that's one of the ways they get so much money off you, because you think, oh, I'm only paying that. And then you realize, well, wait a minute, I'm paying road tax, healthcare tax, homeowners tax, VAT, value added tax on everything I buy. I pay tax when I sell something, and I pay tax when I buy something. And so does everyone else. And it's like, wait a minute, this is crazy. And in fact, here in America, I noticed this because whenever you go anywhere here, there's the men, like I first time a morning I woke up in the Broadmoor, I went to the restaurant to get breakfast. And it was, I mean, it was an expensive hotel. So I expected to
Don't get room service. It's even more.
No, I did that.
Oh,
I did
you?
That. Yeah.
I did too.
Well, I did room service. And I think the food I ordered was something like, was it a burger? It was 27 or something.
Right around there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And then when it came, the final bill was 51. And I looked at it and I was like, hold on a minute, you kind of told me it was 27.
I know.
And I made a decision based on that. I didn't make a decision based on 51. I still would have paid it. I just don't like it when people do that.
Well, across the pond, don't you guys bake the tax into the cost? So when you go to the store, if it's $25, it's in the cost when you look at it.
Yeah, yeah. You don't get an extra price when you get to the till. Yeah, no, the price like is the do. Price. Yeah, I know. Which is even worse because you have to spend the whole time calculating prices when you're walking around. Like,
they must have taken a cue from the healthcare system, right? We want to give you a little surprise at the cash register when you get there.
Yeah, but like, it's really miserly. Like, who wants to do business like that? As an entrepreneur myself, I feel I would feel embarrassed if I said, if he came to you and said, hey, let's do business. And I say, yeah, sure. Yeah. 20 grand. And I'd be coy when the time came to say to you, actually, it's 28 grand.
I know,
it's
like, right?
You know, I don't.
But you don't have to worry about it here because we're just so used to it. You know, it's just.
Yeah, but that's bullshit. That's no reason to live that way, is it?
No, not at all. Did you get a chance to listen to John Goodman, the healthcare speaker, yesterday?
I didn't. Okay. I've been doing interviews. I saw. True. Okay. I've been doing interviews all day. Yeah.
One thing, in talking about, you were kind of talking about setting money aside, right? If you could set your own money aside to pay for healthcare bills. We have a thing called a health savings account here in the United States called an HSA. HSAs, you can put money in the savings account tax-free and it rolls over year over year.
Okay.
Right?
Tax-free. I'm already red flags going. Nothing's tax-free. Right. Come on.
But this is, the health savings account. And you can use it for eligible expenses as determined by the IRS. So it has to be a qualified medical expense per the IRS.
Could it be the fee that the 85 that they pay you? Does that count?
And here's a crazy thing. You cannot use your HSA money here in the United States to go to my practice.
Not even to buy a service for cash?
You can pay for labs, procedures and stuff in our office, but you cannot put that monthly membership on your health savings account card. So that limits over 60 million Americans from being able to use their hard-earned money that they stowed away to pay for free market healthcare.
But I mean, the alternative to that is just don't put it in that. All right, it's tax-free. Just buy some investments and just don't tell them. I mean, it really is. That is really just like, stop, you know, that's our government overreach, isn't it? It's like, here's a savings account for you, but you have to spend it on certain things.
Right? They want you to put it back into big healthcare.
Yeah.
I mean, would you?
So you think lobbyists?
Oh, completely.
Are the reason this happens?
Do you think they want their money going to us, the healthcare disruptors? Hell no, they don't.
So presumably your thing is getting quite big? Is it getting quite a lot of traction? It seems like a really much better way of doing it.
So we started the company here in Colorado Springs with one clinic, a 3.5-year-old company. We now have 3 clinics, 2 here in the Springs, 1 in the North and South End. And then we have one in South Denver. Did you fly into the Springs or Denver?
Denver.
So you would have drove by our practice on the South End of town. We started with one company. We now represent 250 businesses from South Denver through Colorado Springs who purchase our membership for their employees.
And is it something else? Is it something that other people are doing, a similar system? Is it quite common?
We are top 2 in the nation, second state in the nation, with the highest concentration of direct primary care practices. I think it's because Colorado, even though we're not purple anymore, we're still pretty blue, but things have changed. I think it's part of the libertarian free market mindset that people are buying into a new healthcare model. And really, to change the U.S. healthcare system, you need to work with employers because they're the ones that hold the most financial burden to subsidize and pay for insurance for their employees.
Have you got any stats on how much you kind of save? A company percentage-wise.
Let me give you a local school district. So we partner with a local school district and we partner with a healthcare broker on what is called a self-funded health plan. So on a self-funded health plan, all the monies that the employees pay in premiums go into a pot of which the company controls. Now, if you don't have any cost containment and you have everybody going to the ER for an ear infection, that pot of money is going to go away pretty quickly. But when they implement a clinic like us with a health plan, we were able to save the school district $3,200 per teacher per year. Huge, considering education in the United States, the funding for it is pretty much dwindled on the public side. but that's a huge savings for a school. And that's just one example. If you blow up the traditional health plans that are being sold to people by brokers who are getting huge cuts from insurance companies and customize it and bring a free market approach, amazing, amazing, you can start to lower the cost of care.
Do you think that this isn't more popular because people just don't know about it?
Yes. So one of two things. It's interesting growing a business where nobody knows what to Google. I stumbled upon it because I was so pissed at the healthcare system. I Googled doctors who don't accept insurance and found it, right? There is a population of patients who are so exhausted that they electively find us, right? The other problem is you as consumer can't imagine experiencing the healthcare industry without insurance. So when I tell them that you're going to buy this direct, they're like, well, I could pay for my primary care through my copay and pay my $50 fee and whatever. So it's a mind shift that's really, really hard. You think about all the conversations we've had at the LPR retreat with, I think the latest stat that was out, I think Newt Gingrich said it, 17.5% of our economy goes to healthcare. I didn't see a whole lot of questions about healthcare over these last 2.5 days. Why? People don't even know what to ask.
Yeah. Well, also a lot of people, presumably, I'm going to guess it works. If you work for a large company, you just get, they pay your healthcare or they pay a percentage of it or whatever. And do you get to still choose?
So with the company healthcare, if your company offers healthcare and you elect not to choose the company plan, that could put you in jeopardy from getting health insurance in other places.
All right.
So do you see how it's set up? Like it's the architect of it is to support the traditional system. But, you know, when we look at, you know, what Trump and Elon and are doing with Doge, you know, I know they want to Doge the healthcare system. Why do you think they haven't done it yet? They don't even understand it.
Well, what's his name? Kennedy's the, isn't he heading out that sort of office or?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me quite started on Kennedy, but
really,
but
I feel like he seems like a pretty reasonable guy.
He seems like a pretty reasonable guy, but he's a Kennedy who wanted a job in the White House. I mean, let's just, you know, he wants the family dynasty. He was kind of the black sheep in the family, right? So I think part of it was like a middle finger to the rest of the Kennedys, like, haha, I got in the White House. What I really like about what he's doing is, he's putting food and nutrition. And I mean, when you look at, they compare cereal between the United States and Canada, like the Fruit Loops in Canada, the cereal look a little dingier than ours, right? Because they're with natural coloring. Then you have our bright reds and blues. And it's like, yeah, because you're eating petrochemicals for breakfast, right?
Well, why are you even eating Fruit Loops? The Fruit Loops aren't food. They're a product. Like, this is the strange thing, right? We need to reclassify what food is, because
completely.
These days when you walk into especially if it's one of those small convenience stores back home, there's not much food in there.
No.
There's a lot of products that are made.
Candy, sugar.
They're products. They're not food. They are things that people make out of chemicals, put them together and then just sell them to you. You put them in your mouth. It's completely different to what food is.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I understand why. Obviously, you want something that lasts a long time. You want to be able to package it. You want to, you know, you want it to be sweet.
Yeah.
You know, this is the market working for all the worst aspects of the human condition. But it's, yeah, I mean, you know, like you say, I think Kennedy's, one of his points is, let's start being healthy again. Let's try and beat this before it comes.
Right. Yeah. And I think the hard thing to take, you know, when we look at healthcare, especially in the LPR context and stuff where we're at today, what is the proper role of government in that? I would argue there is a proper role of government to have a limited purview to make sure that the citizens don't get the freaking plague, right? Like, your taxpayer base dies off, then what are we, right?
Yeah.
So I think there is a basic responsibility of a nation to provide some basic things, right? And, you know, it's at our particular practice, we don't chase away patients if they don't get vaccinated. We don't you know, chase away patients if in the COVID days if they didn't want to, you know, wear a mask, right? Because we weaponized healthcare in the United States during that time.
You were working during the pandemic. Was your practice was working?
Yeah. Hmm. Yep. Yep.
Did you issue any things like ivermectin and stuff like that?
So,
because I know that was something that people were struggling to be able to get off physicians.
Correct. I think the hard thing was, is when people really didn't need it. You know, you have a physician who 8 years of school, medical residency, you know, they know these things inside, at least ours do, right? Can't talk about the rest, but ours do, evidence-based. And there are some people who would just demand it. And it's like, but this is not going to help you, you know. But it was an idea of the flip side where people in government were saying, no, you can't have this, and which I think just increased.
That's what I mean, though.
Yeah.
I thought a physician was licensed to be able to give out things. Isn't that right?
Yeah. And they can. I think it was just like someone gets wind that a physician's pro ivermectin and all of a sudden there's a protest outside of the freaking clinic and cancel culture and they're done, you know.
I bought some from India, believe it or not. Well, okay. No, I mean, there was a good supply chain.
Not like a rickshaw India. Off the side or anything.
No, because in India, I've lived in India for over a year and a half. And in India, you can buy anything you want. You just walk into a pharmacy and you can buy stuff. You don't necessarily, all right, you don't know necessarily whether or not what you're getting is exactly what you're getting. However, in the case of ivermectin in India was less than a dollar for a strip of pills.
Okay.
And even in the UK, it was like 25 or something. It was a dollar a pill or something. Now, all over Africa, it's the same. Ivermectin is one of the most widely distributed drugs in the world, you know. And there's a reason why. And part of it is because it's so cheap, you know, for what it is. And but so if you could make an educated guess that you were getting actual ivermectin, because why would someone be trying to scam you for something that costs like a dollar a strip? Anyway, but I did actually use it. And my wife swears that I got COVID early on. My wife swears that it stopped me from having the symptoms she had.
Sure. Terrible symptoms. Yeah.
And now obviously it is, I think even the FDA have said, yes, it's something you can prescribe for this, isn't that right? I mean, the conspiracies were saying that it was part of the reason why they didn't like doctors prescribing it, because it meant that there was
a remedy. Yes.
And
yes.
Doesn't that affect something to do with like emergency vaccination laws or something like that? I mean, that I know it's a conspiracy theory, but you can sense there might be some truth in it, if you know what I mean.
I'll tell you the first time I heard humans were taking it. I grew up on a farm in Northeast Iowa and we used it for livestock and animals.
Yeah, I know, but we've got horses.
Yes.
That was like a paste though, wasn't it?
But that's what the liberal media was running with. Someone's taking horse paste, ivermectin.
Well, I think some people actually did.
Sure. But it created a hysteria around it, you know, and weaponized the use of it completely, right? So, and I think that's the scary thing, is when you take choice away from the physician to make choices, educated decisions with their patient, and the government is having a heavy hand, that is clearly not the proper role of government to be
doing. And because of the way government works, especially within the pharmaceutical world, that makes it even more suspicious.
No, completely.
Because, I mean, take ivermectin as an example, right? It's a very safe drug. We know that because there's so much data on use of ivermectin, especially in sub-Saharan Africa and stuff. It's like, you know, so we know it's safe. So we know even if you got it illegally, it's very difficult for anything bad to happen to you. And by banning it or by saying you can't give it out, people might turn to the equine version of it, which isn't good, I'm sure. You know, like it's probably quite, I don't know, powerful. I don't know what, but either way.
Yes.
So that doesn't make sense. If it was a dangerous drug, yes. But if it's a drug that, well, hell, it might work. Even if it doesn't, at least nothing bad's going to happen to me, you know. No, that makes me more suspicious for sure.
Yeah.
You know. But I have no way of knowing how bad my COVID would have been without it, because I only did it.
Sure.
And I had it. Well, I've had COVID hundreds of times, like everyone has.
Sure.
But the first time was the hardest one, I remember. Yeah. And mine was, it helped. I think it helped me. I don't really know. But I did the free market way. I did a bunch of research. Yeah. I watched what people were saying.
Yes.
There were plenty of people I respected saying ivermectin works.
Right.
And then I went to get it and I was like, oh shit, it's difficult to get. And then you have to go into the sort of talk to your friends who know how to get stuff for you. And then it's like, yeah, there are these Indian pharmaceutical companies and we've vetted them and we know which ones are good and blah, you know. And now you have to wait 4 weeks for it to be sent and, you know, but really that's just.
We don't want the consumers going to the black market because the government's weaponized the use of it. Right, where they've said, no, you do not have that choice, you know, and what we want to put into our bodies, it's our purview, for better, for worse, right? But this is the one thing that we have the most control over. And it was just disappointing to see the complete erosion of our public health system, because public health still plays a very important role. You know, there are still things that we need to look at comprehensively around the world and in different countries, because certain diseases and viruses and things like that, they don't care about our politics. They don't care about borders. So how do we take some of these things and create good public health around it?
Yeah. Well, what are there any new advancements or any new ideas or new things that you're toying with in that realm, which might be innovative, more free market innovations that could occur in your line of business at the moment?
In the direct primary care space?
Yeah.
I want to continue to see the rise of the surgical centers that are doing direct surgery, direct specialty. I think that's part of the missing gap, right? Because we had the conversation about what you can do in the primary care office, but then you asked me, like, what about outside of that, right? And outside of that, in the wild west of our current healthcare system, the cost for a knee replacement could vary $50,000 to $100,000, right? But when we bring the free market to it and you begin to shop around for that care, John Goodman, our healthcare speaker yesterday, he brought up a really good analogy about the cosmetic industry. If you want your lips injected or facial or things like that, your insurance company is not going to cover that. So what do? You Google, you look around a bunch of different med spas. I bet their prices are relatively kind of in the same market, but you can shop around for that. I want to see more of that throughout the entire healthcare system. I want to see us reclaiming the family doctor again. There's only about 20% of us left in the country that are independently owned primary care practices by the physicians. I want to see more of that to diversify our healthcare system. And I think too, I wish U.S. consumers weren't so damn lazy when it came to their healthcare, right? Because we complain about this all the time, but we're so reluctant to investigate new healthcare models and payment models that are just as effective and lowering the cost of care.
Mm. And yeah, you're right. I think Americans are quite price savvy on many other things.
Oh, yeah.
Just not that.
No, not the most expensive part of our life.
Well, I mean, I actually flew from Turkey. I went
for Istanbul. Oh, did you take Istanbul. The nonstop to?
No, I was in Istanbul, it was nonstop to Denver.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice fly, actually. But there was a couple of guys on there with who'd had hair plugs and stuff. But it's a bit of a joke, really. Now, when you come Turkish Airlines back to Europe, half the people on there have got like dots on their heads,
but and the wrap around their head.
But I like to see that. That's a good sign.
Medical tourism.
All medical tourism is the free market.
Completely,
speaking, you know.
Yes.
So more to it. You know, I would say it's a shame that inside countries you don't get so much competition. You know, you tend to get one. Well, in like the US system, which is how. I mean, can you sum up how you end up in that situation? Is it because you've got pharmaceutical companies, you've got them lobbying these guys who make the rules, and then so the insurance companies and the medical companies are both lobbying the lawmakers, and they give them money as well, obviously, to sort of support their campaigns. And the whole thing's just you scratch my back, I scratch
completely.
Yours. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, as I said a little bit about the U.S. healthcare consumers not empowered with knowledge, we're not empowered through true price. So the great fleecing of the U.S. healthcare consumer is a real thing. And we're not talking about simple everyday things. We're literally putting your life on the line. And you can fear monger people when you threaten them you're going to take away their health care or say the system's inferior because it's more cost effective. In the United States, there's no correlation between cost and quality.
Right. So before we go then, if anyone's listening to this, what should they Google now to get straight to the companies and people like yourself around the country who are offering this kind of service?
If I were here in the United States, I would Google direct primary care. I would Google free market healthcare. I would Google direct specialty care and start to familiarize yourself with the free market healthcare movement. I fight day and night to evangelize this healthcare movement. And I tell people it is like pushing a mountain over a mountain. The amount of no's I get, even though we are presenting a true solution that's working, it drives me crazy. I go home to my husband and he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I just need to scream into the effing pillow right now because I want to strangle half the people I met with today, right? And it's just, I think that's the hardest part of my job is even when I talk to politicians, consumers, they just kind of gloss over with it. And we just can't keep doing that. So I'll keep evangelizing though. I'll keep telling the story, but I think that's one of the biggest things.
And I hope the free market wins out in the end.
I hope so too.
Well, I mean, I think it begins with information and begins with evangelizing.
Yes.
Because I think, and I've noticed this about many other aspects of my life, I never even bothered thinking that I could choose something different,
right?
Not just in healthcare, but in all kinds of other things.
Right.
And it takes a voice or someone or a chance meeting or hearing something to begin that process. So good luck.
Thank you.
I should imagine you're expanding and will expand further. Are you pretty optimistic?
I'm optimistic. I've got 8 physicians in town waiting to work for us. I just need a few more patients. But yeah, I'm really excited for our future. And I want to thank folks like you for taking the time, have an in-depth conversation about the U.S. healthcare system and actually hopeful ways to fix it.
Well, thank you, Travis. I'm thankful to you for sharing your wisdom. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you. Thank you.